If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is Dr. Mike. We have an exciting guest this half hour. Mick Eberling wrote the book Not Impossible. But what he tells, the stories he tells in this book and what he talks about in this book are really a revolution, both in healthcare and in general in the United States. So this is the good side of hacking, as well as the good side of a lot of things, perhaps. Mick, thank you very much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Now, tell me, people will want to know about genesis of the book, but the genesis of your deciding that a lot of things aren't impossible, and many of us, I think, on the East Coast don't know any place near as much about the makers as we do about the hackers, because hackers get a lot of play in the radio and TV media, and makers don't. So tell us, first of all, makers versus hackers, and then how you came into this world.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think the concept of hacking and concept of making, I think, is one of those things that we're all born with. And it's just kind of a certain sense of human ingenuity. And I would talk about that example when you're looking to hang a picture frame and you got a hammer or something, a nail into a wall, and you don't have a hammer and you start looking around for things and you grab a wrench or you grab a rock or you grab something like that. And that's essentially what it means to be a hacker or a maker. You're looking for things that you can make and looking for things that you can use that maybe weren't actually intended to be that particular thing. In the case of the hammer, a hammer was designed to just do one or two things. And you're turning it into something else. So the concept of hacking typically, as you said, has that sentiment of doing something bad or hacking or stealing money or something like that. But hacking is really just about being, just taking a different vantage point on things. And how do you create something? How do you turn something into something that maybe it wasn't intended for in the first place?
Now, and tell us about making. There's a makers network, and at least I saw some of these, the toys that are being used, built, the robots, etc., from literally 6 and 8 year olds in California when I went to a school there, and I was blown away. So tell us a little bit about the makers network.
You know, I think the funny thing is that the concept of hacking seems to, you know, obviously that relates to programming, you know, and computers and code, and the concept of making and being in the maker movement seems to kind of have that connection as well. But if you think about it, we all grew up to some degree with that maker kind of instinct in us, from Legos to Lincoln Logs, Tinker Toys to whatever. And we've all done that where we've been out, you know, you're out playing someplace and you pick up a stick and you turn it into a magic wand or a gun or something like that. And it's just using your imagination. And the concept of making is that right now. And you're starting to see it being adopted more as, you know, let's make toys for kids that they kind of build themselves. Let's make things that they don't come pre-assembled, is that there's more of an assembly there, and typically there's more of an electronic or a programming or some kind of a computer-aided component to it.
And you're using this with a 3D printed kind of a hand or extra part of body that retains or maintains or regains function. Tell me about that.
The work that I'm doing with Non-Impossible is really about how you take something, make something, hack something, repurpose something, and turn it into maybe something it wasn't intended for, but turn it into something that has a fundamental social need or fundamental human need. So you just cited the example of Project Daniel, that I flew out to the Sudan about a little over a year, a couple months ago, and I 3D printed an arm for a young boy who had lost both of his arms in the war, and he was able to feed himself for the first time in 2 years. And we did
this with consumer available tools and
consumer available technology, a 3D printer and a laptop and some nuts and bolts. Before that, I did it with a device called the iWriter, where we took a pair of cheap sunglasses, a coat hanger, and a web camera, and we mounted the web camera to the front of the coat hanger so that it pointed back at the pupil, and we made a device that allowed a paralyzed artist to be able to draw again for the first time in about 7 years. And the catch to all of this is that not just to do it, and not just to do it so that we're going to go start a 3D printed prosthetic company or an ocular recognition company. We try to do this thing with these somewhat crude materials, but we do it because to make it the lowest possible cost we can with the highest possible functionality. And then we post the code for free. We give it away because in our absolute core and in my absolute core, I believe that freedom of expression, communication, being able to feed yourself, being able to walk, things like that, shouldn't really be governed by whether your mom and dad have insurance or how much money you come from. I think those are some of those things that we can use technology that exists in the world and turn it into something that makes it so it accomplishes something fundamental that a human being might need.
Well, one of the stories, and by the way, if you want to find out more about Mick Eberling, you can, as I said in the earlier part of the show, you can Google him and go to his TED Talk, or TED Talks now, and listen to these remarkable work. But it's also described incredibly well in the book, as well as the future. And so when we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit more about the future. But right now, let's get into the artist who couldn't draw and how this really started you on this path. And maybe it was,
sure.
At least I took it that this is really the start on the path.
Yeah, absolutely. That was chapter one, or that was act one in this concept around Not Impossible. And that was, we had decided, I had a production company that we make, we were working in animation and design, and we were making television commercials and films and movies and things like that. And had a great business, and we decided 1 year that we were going to give money to a charity instead of giving our clients, a bottle of wine or some kind of forgetful gift at Christmas time. And we decided to give it to the Temp One Foundation, and Temp One Foundation is around this artist named Temp. And when we sat down with his father and brother and said, "Hey, we're gonna, I'm gonna give you this money. What are you gonna use it for?" His brother said, "I just want to be able to talk to my brother again. I just want to be able to communicate with him and have him be able to express himself." And I was dumbfounded because, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners probably would feel the same way. I thought that everybody who was paralyzed had access to what I call a Stephen Hawking machine. A tool that was provided to them to let them, use their eyes to communicate. You saw it with Christopher Reeves or Stephen Hawking or some of the people that you might have, some of the more popularized people that had some kind of handicap. And he said that, his brother and father went on to explain that that's not the case. That's only if you've got insurance or money. And they had neither. So they were communicating through a piece of paper, and they ran their hand along a piece of paper, and every time they got up to a letter on that piece of paper, Temp would blink, and then they would write that letter down, and then they would repeat that over and over again until they started to form sentences and understood what Temp wanted. And for me, that to me seemed like something that was ridiculous. It was preposterous, especially in, this was 2009 when this took place. That we have the type of technological advancements, yet we're still using a piece of paper in some of the most significant hospitals in the world.
And when we come back, Mick, so we're talking with Mick Eberling on The Book Is Not Impossible, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the Temp Foundation, what he did. This is really clever, really, and then I want to get into There Are Only Monkeys.
We get it. Who wants to talk about vaginal itching and irritation?
Vaginal itching, burning, and irritation can be very embarrassing to talk about, even to your gynecologist. Though this topic can be quite uncomfortable, this vaginal problem could be affecting you, just as it affects millions of other women. Thankfully, there is now a product that can provide you with instant relief. We mean fast, as in relief right now. Prevalief Soothe is a natural, paraben-free, rapidly absorbing lotion that is comfortable and soothing to apply. Prevalief Soothe uses a new, natural soothing peptide complex and is made with natural probiotic technology to support vaginal health. To stop your itching fast, visit Prevalief.com to find out more information and purchase the product for immediate relief from your feminine issues. That's Prevalief.com. Prevalief, for immediate comfort and relief.
This is Meryl Streep. Over the years, I have played some characters you could call controlling, but the truth is, there's so much in life we can't control. But here's something we can. Colorectal cancer. It affects men and women, and it's the second leading cancer killer in the U.S., which is astounding, considering it's almost entirely preventable. Here's how. Most colon cancers start as polyps, and screening helps find polyps, so they can be removed before they even turn into cancer. Screening also finds this cancer early, when treatment works best. For me, screening was simple and quick. It was no big deal, except for the huge sense of relief you feel afterwards. There are several tests that you can choose from. If you're 50 or older, you should talk to your doctor. Decide which one's right for you. Take control. Do everything you can to prevent colon cancer. Screening saves lives. It could really save your life. For more information, call 1-800-CDC-INFO.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.